All right, I'm not going to keep you here the whole time, but I do want to talk about a few things. They used to have a portable whiteboard right here. The fact that they don't makes me wish that everyone had bent over on that edge, but anyway, we'll deal with it. A couple things I wanted to add to what Renee said, one of the things I want to talk about is your written assignments, your writing assignments. And I don't know how many journal articles you've read so far, maybe not many, but if you're going to go to grad school, it'll be a lot eventually. And regardless of whether you're going to grad school or not, though, it's important to read some journal articles, just because if you graduate without going to grad school, you'll likely never read a journal article. That's one reason. The more practical reason is to do well on my written assignments. And that's because on your paper sections, by far the most important thing, criterion, as far as I'm concerned when I grade them, is how well you emulate the style of writing that kind of section. And not only do journal articles have a totally different style of writing compared to other writing, scientific writing is different from popular writing, for instance, but even within one article, each section has a different style of writing. And if your main job is to emulate that style, you won't do well if you try to skip the step of reading any of these journal articles, which is a tendency for people to want to do, because journal articles are pretty arcane. They're very specialized. You will not understand much of what's in journal articles that you read, but that's okay, because you can still get a feel for how they're written. And that's what I want you to try to copy. Not the words, of course, that's plagiarism, but the style of how they're written. So I wanted to just talk about those individual sections for a little bit. Before I get to that, though, in Renee's video, she said, or that the video said, that all journal articles basically are secondary sources. But really, if you just confine yourself to journal articles, you can think of journal articles as being primary or secondary. Primary journal articles or secondary journal articles. What's the difference? What makes something a primary journal article? Exactly. A primary journal article is written by the person or team that actually did that specific research, and they're presenting it for the first time to the scientific world. And that's what the vast majority of journal articles are. But what else do journals publish? What are secondary journal articles? Examples? Review articles. Review articles are very useful if you're new to a topic, because what makes something a review article is that someone who is an expert in that general field has gone to the trouble of compiling basically the state of the art, things that we know as of publication date, by saying what that investigator and others in the world doing similar things know currently. So review articles are typically very much longer, because they're not just presenting the data of that person. They're presenting the data of many investigators throughout the world. And they're summaries. So they're not only longer in the text, but they have a much longer section of literature cited. There will be a lot of citations in a reference, in a review article. But review articles are not necessarily for this class, but if you're trying to research something, review articles, if they exist for that topic, are a good place to start, because then that bibliography can tell you really where to go for specific things. The reason I wanted to make the distinction is because if I, on any of these assignments, require you via the instructions that are on Blackboard to have a certain minimum number of primary journal articles, you have to make sure they are primary in that case. So a review article, even though it's very useful, will not fulfill that qualification. So understand the difference. And they're not always labeled. Some review articles are labeled, Some journals are totally dedicated to reviews, like Annual Review of Biochemistry or something. All of those articles will be review articles. Some will be listed as review. Some won't, though, and you're just going to have to know by reading them that they're review articles. All right? Books of any sort are not will not qualify as a primary journal article. So I'm not telling you not to use those references. They're very valuable. And anything you use should be cited if you truly use it. That just won't count toward a minimum of whatever minimum number for primary journal articles. All right, now I'm going to just go to one of my papers since it's linked here. Has nothing to do with anything you're going to use in this course. So you would never use this as, you would never cite this in one of your papers for this class, but it's just a way to quickly get to a PDF so you can see how the formatting is. And so it's useful, even though it's totally unrelated to what you're doing, just to get a feel for how they're written. In this particular journal, Journal of Experimental Biology, the abstract is called summary, but that's what an abstract is, right? An abstract is very short. It's usually absolutely limited by the editor. So if they say 150 words and it's 151, you're going to have to find a word to cut out because they will otherwise. And it's sometimes very hard to get the information you think needs to be there in the abstract. But the abstract is there just basically for the reader to quickly read in order to tell that reader whether he wants to bother reading the whole article. That's why they're useful. But what is in an abstract is really a very terse summary of what you did and what the important results were. So it's like the whole paper just within a couple paragraphs. And I don't think you have to do an abstract anyway, but that's what they are. Introductions are difficult to write, but well, they're difficult to write because you have to. It's one of the most heavily cited of the sections. And by the way, I hope all of you realizes that citation and quotation are not the same thing. Scientific writing very rarely uses quotation, but it uses citation extensively. Quotation is just a specific type of citation. Citation is using a source. Quotation is using the actual words. And you won't find that within the body of a journal article, quotation. But you find citation all over. So any time you are writing something that isn't coming straight from your brain, your own knowledge, you should be citing, basically, where you got that information. And citations come in two forms. There are in-text citations that are in parentheses in the sentence somewhere. And you see those scattered right out. Like, for instance, this one. This is an in-text citation indicating the various sources where I got the information to write the sentence that's part of. All right? It's a common mistake to undercite your papers. If I read something and it's obvious that you got this information from somewhere but there's no citation, really that's a mild form of plagiarism. It's not something that's going to get you in trouble plagiarism-wise, but think about that. You might think, I just keep citing the same source over and over. Well, that's okay. That happens. So just keep using in-text citations. But every in-text citation, in parentheses, in the text somewhere, needs to have a full-blown citation in the literature cited section, and vice versa. So check that error before you ever hand in a paper in. Make sure that however many sources are in your literature cited at the end, there's at least one in-text citation for every reference. And by the way, some sections don't have any citations in them necessarily. Like materials and methods probably doesn't, unless you cite your own materials and methods from a previous paper. But anyway, if you include citations, whether they're mandatory or not according to my instructions, make sure you also include a literature cited section. Okay. So the introduction is background information. It basically introduces the topic, says what other people have done, the state of knowledge, what we've learned about this so far, which is why it's heavily cited. It brings in the information we know from others. But then it makes a smooth transition into why you are doing the specific thing that you're doing in this study based on the general topic. All right, so that's what an introduction does, but read several of them, even though they might not be directly related to what you are writing about, just so you can get that style down. That's what I'm really looking for. After introduction is materials and methods, and let me just basically talk about this in terms of what not to do. One thing you don't want to do is separate materials from methods. In other words, don't list what you used as a materials list. You find that often in laboratory manuals. That's just so you can set things up. But don't do that in the journal articles. Don't say, this is what we used, and just list the things. Just list materials as you need to, as you mention how you used them in your methods. All right. Another common error is to use recipe format. Do not do that. Don't tell the reader how to do the method. Instead, say what you did using past tense. Past tense throughout materials and methods, because you already did it. So we put 5 milliliters of whatever into whatever. Don't say, do this. Say, we did it. All right? Materials and methods are some of the most painful things to read before you're really familiar with techniques, because you just won't understand what they're saying at all, basically. Until you read enough, until you've done some real research, it'll just seem like gibberish, basically. But you can still get a feel for how that style differs from all the other sections. So do that. Read a couple materials and methods sections. After materials and methods, we get to, eventually, results. And here's another place where there's frequent errors, or a couple common errors. Results, of course, includes results. But that doesn't mean a complete results section is just graphs and tables. Now, typically, you would have a graph, or maybe more than one, or a table, or more than one table. But that doesn't constitute a complete results section. You also need to have some paragraphs describing the important results. And you want to do this in a way that doesn't just directly repeat what's already in the table or the graph. So the table or the graph gives you raw data or processed data in easy-to-read form, graphical form. But you can still talk about those data slightly differently. For instance, you might say that this measurement ranged from this to this, which is giving slightly different information from what you don't want to just repeat the values that are already in a table in sentence form. But you don't want to skip that sentence form part from results. Okay? So once again, look at real results sections. And then the discussion is another hard part to write, because that's where you have to say what it all means, which requires you knowing what it all means. Well, one thing I forgot to say about results is that you don't want to interpret your results at all. You just, in results, you want to just deliver them. So don't say whether something was interesting or anything like that in the results section. You're just giving the results. In the discussion, that's where you say whether it's interesting or why it's interesting or why it's important. You interpret those results in the discussion, but you also compare your interpretation to similar things that others have done in this topic, which is why, along with introduction, discussion is heavily cited usually as well. So compare your work to others. say what might have gone wrong, say what you might do differently, say what your work, say what future work could be done based on the current work. Those are typically things that are found in discussion. And then literature cited is pretty self-explanatory. I've already talked about it, but just make sure that you are consistent in your formatting. Don't forget the alphabetization. There's actually every different journal has a slightly different format that they demand. And so I don't demand that you use a certain general format like MLA or APA or whatever. You can actually just mimic this Journal of Experimental Biology if you want, as long as you're consistent within your literature cited. Okay? So choose a format and stick to it for all your references. Make sure that each one of them has at least one in-text citation somewhere in the text. All right? Any questions on that? Then I hope you really do at least quickly read some journal articles to get a feel for it, because that's the main thing. I'm not going to grade you on whether you did the experiment correctly or whether your results make sense. I'm going to grade you on how well you emulate the style. All right.